So yesterday I spoke a lot about mind, about consciousness. I spoke about the system of consciousness as depicted in the Lankavatara Sutra and the Yogacara tradition. And I hope from that very brief and rather simplistic look at that material, I hope one thing became clear, and that was just how important, how central, how essential mind is. That it's mind that needs attention, that it's mind that needs looking into. And in the end, it's about waking up to the truth that there is only mind, a radiant, non-dual awareness in which there are no distinctions at all between self and others, self and things, between Buddhas and beings. And I spoke as well about Dogen's brilliant insight into this as an intimacy. Of course, this is only a manner of speaking, this sort of language. It can be misunderstood when you talk about mind. If you looked into it, you'd never find this mind. It's empty, pure, still, unfathomably deep, a mystery. We also saw that to reach this, to this state, to wake up to this, that it's not just about going around with some, you know, intellectual idea of non-duality. To reach this, you need deep and continuous practice. You need to be dropping into the river, the ocean of the store consciousness, into the alia, the seeds of skillful creative energies. These skillful and creative energies need to perfume the alia. We need to perfume the alia with the sweet scents of spiritual practice. This is what spiritual life is about. Day to day, moment by moment practice, whether on or off the cushion, maintaining skillful states. It's the only way. It's the only way to be. It's the only way to practice. It's the only way to reach what's called the revolution in the basis. The utter turning around of consciousness, in which when all the impure seeds are utterly purified, turfed out of consciousness, and there's that realization of non-dual awareness. So keep that in mind. Keep that as the sort of backdrop. As I tell you a story, a very famous story from the Zen tradition. And the story goes back to sometime in the 9th century and centres around the great Chan master Chao Chu, Joshu in Japanese. And Chao Chu's own life was one of almost constant travel. He visited over 80 of the great disciples of the great master Ma Tzu. The most prominent fifth, Chao Chu being Nan Chuan. You probably remember the story of Nan Chuan and the cat when some monks were arguing over a cat. Nan Chuan turned up and cut the cat in half, which is another one of those koans. Was he being unskillful? Don't need to get bogged down in that. Anyway, even after Chao Chu's awakening, he kept travelling, studying and practising. And moving about. He was a real foot-travelling patch-road monk, as they call it, a real Chan traveller. And he finally settled down, if you can call it that, at the age of 80, in the Kuan Yin Temple of Chao Chu, hence his name, Chao Chu. Very often these masters take the name from the place in which they're associated. So he settled down in Chao Chu in northern China. And it's said that he taught for another 40 years, only passing away at the age of 120. And he was famous for his asceticism. He really thought austerity was the way. He wanted to emulate the ancient Buddhist monks in his monastery. There was no personal storage space. I know sometimes people, when they come to Padmaloka, and think, not much storage space to put my stuff. Well, in this place, there was no storage space at all. You just had your robes and you had your basic possessions. The food was strictly vegetarian. One day, Master Chao Chu's chair broke, the rope chair that he'd used for many, many years. It was very, very old. And he just found a bit of firewood and just lashed a bit of firewood to the broken stump. So he just sat on this rickety old chair when people would come to see him. And of course his disciples wanted to get him a nice new one, make him a new one. He said, no, 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 this is fine. this is my chair. And everybody worked each day in Chao Chu's monastery in the fields, or doing some construction, or cleaning, cooking, that kind of thing. This is the old Chan tradition. The Chan monasteries were independent. It's one of the reasons why they avoided persecution, the various persecutions that went through Chinese history of Buddhism. The Chan monasteries tended to be avoid that because they were isolated and because they were self-supporting, which I think is a real message. So they did intensive practice and work, workers' practice. Anyway, one day old Chao Chu found a monk sort of skiving off. He sort of found him round the back of the shrine hall. And he asked him, he said, you know, you can imagine the response of the monk and the old boy coming round. And Chao Chu said, where have all the virtuous ones gone? Meaning the other monks in the community. And the monk said, they're working in the fields. Chao Chu took his knife, which he used for work, from his sleeve, and he gave it to the monk and said, my tasks as abbot are many. I ask you to cut off my head. I'm weary. And the monk ran off, terrified. He was a great teacher, apparently, had many disciples, and his manner of teaching is described as lip chan, lip chan. Not mouth chan, not just talking about it, but it was lip chan because a light issued from his lips. His words would just light you up. And the texts say that he didn't hit and beat like some masters, thankfully. He would only just use a few words to bring people to awakening. It's said, in fact, there's this lovely expression, he used flavourless words. Flavourless words, plain, plain words. Words that you can't sort of get a hold on, get a handle on. Flavourless words. And the great Yuan Wu says of Chao Chu, a very capable teacher of our clan. He does not discuss the abstruse or mysterious. He always deals with people in terms of the fundamental matter. Anyway, one day, a monk came to him and there was something on this monk's mind. This monk had been seriously practicing for a long time. He was practicing the precepts. He had been meditating for a long time, studied the scriptures, the Diamond Sutra, the Lankavatara Sutra, the Sutra of Huineng, the Avatamsaka Sutra. He was thoroughly imbued with the Dharma, thoroughly imbued with notions like the mutual interpenetration of all phenomena, notions like emptiness, notions like Buddha nature, the Buddha nature in all things, in all beings. Very important. He had great faith in that, great faith in himself, great faith that there was this Buddha nature and that you could awaken to that nature. Anyway, one day he was looking at the dogs that you would, you know, hang around the monastery, the strays that would scavenge around. And they weren't pretty, of course, flea-ridden, diseased-looking creatures, scratching around, always hungry, always fighting, some of them cowering and pathetic. You see, if you go to India, go to our retreat centres, there's always a pack of dogs around the retreat centre wanting scraps, and they really are sorry-looking creatures, some of them. And the monk began to wonder, looking at these creatures, you know, fighting and mating and cowering, do they have Buddha nature? Does that dog have Buddha nature? He's told everything does, but, well, do they? How do these dogs have Buddha nature? So there's a kind of doubt. So he went to Chao Chu, went to his abbot, went to his teacher. He'll surely resolve this doubt. He'll sort it out for me, because he had great faith in Chao Chu. Enormous faith. As much faith, if not more faith, in Chao Chu than all the scriptures and, you know, all that. It was his teacher. So he went to see the old man, this plain and simple old man with his lined old face and his simple robe, sitting on his rickety chair, sitting with so much dignity. And the monk felt, of course, great reverence and awe in relation to Chao Chu. So he asked, does a dog have Buddha nature? And Chao Chu just said, no. Just like that. Flavourless word, flavourless word. A flat, plain, flavourless no. And the monk was totally shocked. No. Just that. And looking at Chow Chu, he knew that the interview was over, finished, ended. He'd shut up shop. Flavourless. It ended with no. Wu in Chinese. Mu in Japanese. No.